I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space for independent thinkers out there. It's Friday. Like every Friday, next hour, 10 o'clock, we'll get into some foreign policy stuff in my segment, False Flag Friday. It's amazing to see false flags become such a part of kind of mainstream news. They're talked about openly now. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, those were conspiracy theories. Now governments are openly talking about false flags and accusing each other of it. Got some news on that today. And then, as always, we will finish up with This Week on the Crazy Train, chronicling the world's descent into complete madness. So, lots to get to today. I got a ton of clips for that segment and earlier on in the show. Start off the show, as I do oftentimes, with a quote from our last real president. No, wrong. I don't agree with you there. The last real president was John F. Kennedy. He said, "A nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people." A nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. I would like to hope, I hope, that part of the reason of censorship at the government level these days is because they are afraid of us. That would be a nice, pleasant change. And H.L. Mencken said, "The most dangerous man to any government is the man who is able to think things out without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Almost inevitably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, intolerable." I am that dangerous man. I have invariably come to the conclusion that our government is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. I'm going to give you an example. I was listening yesterday to Dana Lash's show. I think she's got one of the best shows on radio. Good style, good sense of humor. She was talking yesterday to Carol Roth. So this is, you know, Dana Lash, pretty kind of typical conservative radio, better than most, I believe, but pretty typical. And she was talking to Carol Roth. I'm not really familiar with Carol Roth, but Carol Roth was obviously a conservative, and they were on there having some laughs, really, about what's going on in the Biden administration. She was making, Carol Roth, her guest, was making some great points about all kinds of conservative stuff, criticizing Biden with very good points. Of course, that's not very difficult. And they were talking about things. And then she and Dana Lash started talking. They were discussing the plan that the IRS has to hire, 84,000, 87,000 new IRS agents in this ridiculous new law. New regulation, I guess, would be a better way to put it. I don't think this was legislated. I think it was just demanded by either the stroke of a pen or some agency edict. They've hired all these new agents, and they're going to start going after people who've got their little side hustles. Anywhere that you get money, if you get it through Etsy or Venmo, these platforms are now required to issue you a 1099 and notify the IRS if you have more than $600 annually in transactions. And Carol Roth on the Dana Lash show yesterday and Dana were outraged about that, as I am. And, you know, Carol Roth made a great point. She said they're not hiring 80,000 IRS agents just to go after 700 billionaires. They quite obviously are targeting the little people with that number of new agents. Now, here's where I'll show you how so we're all kind of on the same page with this stuff. I'm enjoying the conversation. They're making great points. Here's where I part with the traditional conservative. I guess this is where my libertarian comes out. The difference, if you will. Carol Ross said, it is ridiculous to be tracking all these small transactions all the way down to $600. These are people just selling things in garage sales or making up a couple little things that she was saying. Now, I don't know if this is actually accurate, but she was saying if somebody transfers you money, maybe you all get together and host some kind of a big party and somebody sends you some money, you got to keep your receipts because you'll get a 1099 from Venmo, and then you have to show that it was just reimbursement for expenses. I don't know if it's to that level, but I would not be surprised at all. But this is what Carol Ross said. She said, it used to be $20,000. That was the threshold for Venmo and Etsy and all of these places to issue this 1099. Carol Ross said, it used to be $20,000. Now, I can see if your little business is doing $20,000 or more in sales, then they should be, you know. See, and this is the difference between me and conservatives. It's this idea that conservatives have that, well, they need to leave you alone for a $600 purchase. But for some reason, in this particular case, the former level was $20,000. But that there's any number where the IRS suddenly begins to inject itself into your life. That suddenly, now, at this arbitrary number, $20,000 today is not worth the same as $20,000 20 years ago, is it? $20,000 this year is not worth what it was a year ago, 6 months ago. So they set these arbitrary limits. But the difference between me and your rank and file conservatives is conservatives concede so much ground to things like IRS, to regulations. And then you draw this arbitrary line. Well, $600 for the IRS to be paying attention to everything that you're doing online, to get a notice, to make sure that they get their money from you. You know, the tax laws are supposedly supposed to be voluntary. You're supposed to report all of your income to the IRS, supposedly, according to them. But the conservatives have this belief that, well, yeah, I mean, if you make $20,000, then definitely the IRS should be coming in there and really giving you a lot of scrutiny and making sure that they turn you upside down and get every nickel that our federal government is entitled to out of that $20,000. $600, that's too low. It's all too low. The fact that we have now accepted people on the right, these rugged individualists, these patriots, have accepted on the right that this agency does have a right to come in if you do some business online and make sure that that is documented fully for the federal government's purposes. That is the difference between the Mike Madison Show and your typical conservative show. I do not concede that ground, that there is any level at which the government needs to be involved in your personal transactions. We've got the runoff coming between Michael Guest and Michael Cassidy in just a couple of weeks here. And I was listening to Michael Guest was on one of the WGOP radio stations. And he was talking, he was asked about, you know, the things that Michael Cassidy has pointed out about Michael Guest, the couple of big things being his vote for the January 6th committee and his vote for Planned Parenthood. What Michael Guest said about the Planned Parenthood thing kind of struck me, and I've heard this before. I don't think I've brought it up on the show, but I thought it was interesting. Essentially, Michael Guest, when it comes to the Planned Parenthood funding, essentially said, look, this is part of the larger budget, and he does this, which I've been trying to deprogram conservatives for 5.5 years now on this. He said, look, that was in a bill that was going to fund our military. Because he knows that with conservatives, as soon as they say military or national security, you snap to. Oh, of course. Well, we definitely had to do that then. We've got to give $1 trillion to the national security state. I mean, there's no debate about that. And so he says, essentially, look, this Planned Parenthood funding was down into a budget. There wasn't a line item for funding Planned Parenthood. It's just part of a larger budget and a very, very small piece. $1.5 billion to fund Planned Parenthood. It was just a little part down in there of some kind of funding mechanism. But in order to keep the government open and fully fund our military, I had to just go ahead and vote for this thing. And I found this kind of interesting. So I guess the idea would be that if you want to fund the military and this monstrous government that we have, you have to let Planned Parenthood have its stuff. It has to stay in there. This is the only conclusion I can come to. If I'm wrong, feel free to call and let me know. First of all, how is it conservative for any of these Republicans, Michael Guest or any of the rest of them, to vote for these massive government spending bills? Whether they are under the Trump administration or the Biden administration, why isn't the go-to $5 trillion budget for the federal government? No. Now, one of the reasons they do vote for this, they won't tell you this. They'll tell you they're fiscally responsible, but there's a ton of goodies for both Republican and Democrat donors, largely the same class of people, pharmaceutical companies, defense contractors. There's a lot of goodies in these huge budgets. That's why they vote for them. But the Michael Guest, which is the establishment, I mean, it's just political parties. They've got to vote for these big bills to keep the government open. I don't know how it's conservative at all to vote for these monstrous bills. And then now act like it's just Joe Biden who's responsible for the inflation. Very interesting, economically contradictory to say those two things. Well, yeah, I voted for these massive government spending bills that had to be funded by printing up new money, which causes inflation, but I'd absolve myself for responsibility because I've signed these big spending bills. It's Joe Biden's fault we got inflation, not mine. So I don't think it's conservative to sign these big, giant bills anyway, but they always hide behind military spending. I mean, essentially what Michael Guest is saying is, in order to fully fund the military, because he knows that's what conservatives love, they love that empire, they love that $1 trillion national security state. In order to fully fund the military, I had to fully fund the Department of Education, the Department of Homeland Security. I had to fully fund the Health and Human Services. We had to fully fund welfare. We had to fully fund expansion of Medicaid. I mean, essentially, Michael Guest, every time you sign one of these giant spending bills that's got Planned Parenthood down in there, there's a whole lot of other things that are not conservative that are in those bills as well. What is the benefit of voting yes on these things? Why don't you just vote no? Aren't you for small, limited government and fiscal responsibility? But even more than that, what I find interesting is that, well, he knows that the Planned Parenthood funding is down in that budget somewhere, but he's got to vote for it because it's what keeps the government open and it's what fully funds the military. What if somewhere buried in one of these monstrous bills, there was language that said, we're going to euthanize 5,000 handicapped children, born children, living children? Would they say, I had to vote for a bill that had funding in it to euthanize 50,000 handicapped live children, because if not, we wouldn't have been able to fund the military. What if there was language somewhere buried down in the bill, or he knows within the funding, you know, maybe this money goes to Health and Human Services, and then he knows it's going to go to Planned Parenthood, but maybe there was somewhere buried in the bill he knew that Health and Human Services was funding through this bill was going to pay for 10,000 kittens to be run over by steamrollers, live kittens. Would he have just said, well, I mean, you know, in order to fully fund the military and keep our government open, I had to make sure, and it's unfortunate that we had to steamroll over 10,000 live kittens. I mean, is there anything that can be in the budget if funding Planned Parenthood? Now, Guest went on to talk about his great rating with the pro-life groups, and I have no doubt that Michael Guest is a pro-life guy. My question is really more to the mechanism. How bad is Washington, D.C., that you have to include? I would imagine if any Republican went to any of these monstrous bills, at least probably half of it they would find objectionable. But they have to pass the half they find objectionable, which is in the trillions of dollars. Understand, these budgets are in the $5 to $6 trillion range now. We have to give out $2 to $3 trillion to things we really disagree with in order to get that $2 or $3 trillion that we want. And the same thing with the left. You know, so I guess there's leftists out there right now that maybe they're challenged by, well, the Democrats don't really care about the military-industrial complex. They kind of like them now. But if there's something that conservatives got in this big budget that Michael Guest voted yes on, that liberals didn't like. I guess a liberal politician would go, yeah, well, we had to fund the military-industrial complex, as if we couldn't have our welfare state. And again, I'm fully aware that I view the world very differently, but it's just kind of interesting to me, you know, this idea that, you know, as a pro-life person, that you would just kind of gloss over, well, I mean, in order to fund the military so that we can kill people overseas, yeah, we had to sacrifice some of the unborn here, but that's just the way Washington works. You can't hold me accountable for that. That's what he's saying, is he not? And he's not alone. It's not even really a picking at Michael Guest. Republicans across the spectrum vote on these massive bills that contain trillions of dollars of spending that they know is unwise, immoral, theft from the American people, but they pass them because then they get their goodies. And the left does the same thing. The left allows trillions of dollars of things they don't agree with to be passed through in these monstrous bills so that they get their goodies. Each side believing we're essentially harming the country with half of the budget, but we've got to have it because of the good half of the budget. This is actually the thinking in Washington, D.C. Michael Guest says, in order to fund this monstrous government, there was just no way I could stop funding Planned Parenthood. It's just part of the game. We'll change the damn game. Or stand on some level of principle and just say no. Even if you still believe that we should be giving the Defense Department, the Pentagon, the woke Pentagon that does exactly what the founders warned us of, and they travel the globe seeking monsters to destroy. If you believe giving the Pentagon almost $800 billion now, even if you believe that, can you not see how maybe voting for these $5, $6, $7 trillion spending packages each year through this government that is bankrupting us and has led to the inflation that you're bitching about right now? Can you not see that maybe a no vote is required at some point? Government shutdown? You know that doesn't affect anybody except for the Beltway crew, right? Nobody really cares about that stuff. Do you know how dramatically better our lives would be if they would shut this government down? I can't even begin to tell you. I might do all next week on what could happen if our government just disappeared at the federal level. But why is this not, whether it's Planned Parenthood or just in principle itself, I, as a conservative, if I was a Republican conservative, I'll bet anything on Michael Guest's webpage, somewhere he's got something about fiscal responsibility. Why is it not appropriate to just vote no on these bills? Just vote no. They're going to pass anyway. You could do it because 95% of Washington, D.C. is bought and paid for scumbags. So you could vote no on this thing, and then if ever asked, you could say to your constituents, and this would make you very popular, number one, I don't vote for massive spending bills that are bankrupting this country and creating inflation, and number two, I knew that Planned Parenthood would get $1.5 billion out of this bill, and I couldn't consciously support that. It'd be a good political move. So why don't they do it? Because the leadership tells them not to. Because the leadership, the cronies up there, the corporatists, the fascists in our government, tied in with the corporation and the lobbyists, tell them, you get in line, boy. You'll get cover when they expose this Planned Parenthood fund, and you just tell them that it wouldn't have funded the military if you'd voted no. That's good enough. It works every time. I found it a very lame conservative excuse for signing any spending bill. Planned Parenthood is just one of the worst things in these funding bills. But there are trillions of dollars of more waste, fraud, abuse, and downright unconstitutional things they do with all this money they steal from the American people. What would the problem be with Michael Guest having cast a no vote on that bill? Is that really that hard? Apparently it is. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too.
Markets yesterday, stock markets. I told you this was going to be an economic show going forward as we see what's going on here. Markets had a rough day yesterday. The European central banks barely even glanced at talking about raising rates, and this shook the markets here too, as they understand that the world is going into a rising interest rate environment, at least for now. They're gonna stop. They're gonna give in to this inflation. This inflation is with you for a long time. Long time. And it's gonna get worse. Mark my words. Now I saw a podcast. Here's how I operate. I saw a Wealthy on Chris Martinson and Andy Taggart. They do some financial shows, and I saw a headline yesterday on one of their videos that says, is deflation the threat rather than inflation? Now, I can't see how that's going to be the case. Some things will deflate. I mean, we're going to see deflation essentially in home prices. But I'm going to watch that because I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. I find that very interesting. The economy is incredibly complicated, but there are some things that are simple. When you increase the money supply by 40% over about 2.5 years between Trump's last year and Biden's first year, you're going to get inflation. It's a mathematical certainty. It's nothing ideological about it. You're going to get inflation. But the markets swooned yesterday. They opened up higher today, but the Dow has turned red along with the S&P. NASDAQ's clinging to about 0.5% gain right now. But I found an interesting thing. I'm pretty interested in what's happening in the crypto markets. Another headline today, we talked with Steven Utroska the other day about this Celsius operation. It's one of the largest crypto lender. Still don't quite understand what that is, but they stopped their clients from being able to withdraw money, transfer money, swap things out within their account. That's never a good sign. Headline today is days after Celsius paused withdrawals, another crypto lender, Babel Finance, followed suit. So there may be some margin calls being made in the Bitcoin world, and I've been interested watching it because Bitcoin came down pretty hard from around 66 or 69,000 down to 30,000 and hovered there for a while, and then it broke that about a week ago. And it went straight down just about to 20,000 per Bitcoin where it hovers now, and I'll be honest with you, I'm just curious. It is really clinging to this 20,000. It's at $20,466 per Bitcoin right now. I believe it's probably going to break 20,000 to the downside soon, probably over the course of the weekend. The one week return on Bitcoin right now is negative 31.09%. What I thought was interesting about this chart, though, as I was looking it up this morning, the trading activity in Bitcoin, 86% of the trades are buys, only 14% sells. Now, what that says is, to me, and I could be wrong about this, but I found that an interesting, you know, obviously for every transaction, there's one buyer, one seller, right? But what it means is that certain people are placing big sells, and a lot of little people are jumping in and getting little pieces of those big sells, right? Somebody listing 100 Bitcoin for sale, that's their sell transaction, but that's a lot of money. You're talking about 100 times 20,000, so a few million bucks, a couple million dollars. So you've got people selling big lots of it. This you would think are the wealthier people, the more plugged in people, but we got the little people, what I call the retail investor out there, the mom and pops, the people who believe that Bitcoin can't go any lower. It was at 69,000 and now it's down at 20. It's got to be a buying opportunity. So they're all buying these things from the big seller. But it's 86% buy in the trading activity and only 14% sells. Typically, when something is crashing like this is right now, you would expect you'd see a whole lot more selling than buying. But I believe that this is little people continuing to pile into Bitcoin. We'll see. Maybe they're right. I have no earthly idea. I want to address one other thing, too, because it came, there's one of the ads on the news break. You will hear this. One of the sponsors of the CBS news breaks is some oil and gas investment or something. And the company doesn't really matter. It's not about that. But you'll hear it's an appeal to accredited investors. And I find this kind of interesting, particularly in light of what's gone on with Bitcoin. Now, I was aware of accredited investors back in early 2000s, when I was a financial advisor. There are certain investment vehicles that you have to, and I should have looked this up, I forget the exact metrics, but it's something like you have to have a net worth of, you know, over million or $2 million. You have to have $500,000 liquid. There's all these things. Basically, you have to prove that you're a rich dude. Rich dame. Sorry, is that sexist? You got to prove that you're a rich person in order to have access to some of these investments. What's interesting is, and you can lose money in these investments, but typically they're very lucrative things, and they shut out. This is government mandates, government regulation. They basically say, hey, this is a, you know, because it's speculation in a lot of these things. And so the government sets up all these rules and says, well, we want to make sure you're a rich dude to get into this investment, because what they tell you is because you might lose your money. We want to make sure you're not risking too much money, that maybe if you're not rich enough and you can't absorb in a loss on this, we're going to stand in the, we're going to protect you from yourself, you big dummies. And so that you have to become this accredited investor to get access to a whole lot of investment vehicles that, I got to tell you, over the years have been wildly successful for the wealthy people. But the little guy's locked out of them. This is your SEC. This is your Treasury Department that sets up all these rules so that they make sure there's some gates there. We don't want to let a bunch of poor people in on these investment things. We're going to make them prove they're one of us before we let them invest. But which is, it's strange in light of Bitcoin. You want to talk about something speculative? Look at the chart of Bitcoin. Now, I am not calling for any government regulation of Bitcoin in any way, shape, or form. But the fact of the matter is, people have made a lot of money on Bitcoin, and a lot of people have lost a lot of money on Bitcoin. That's life in the big city. That's called trading. It's called speculation. It's called investing. You didn't have to be an accredited investor to buy WorldCom stock, but you could have lost every nickel you had. I'm just saying, I'm just kind of pointing this out because I don't think people really realize how everything has been tilted against average, ordinary, working people trying to save and invest. You're not given access to certain asset classes and some investment opportunities because you can't prove you're rich enough. Now, you can risk it all on Bitcoin today if you want to. You can go out and get a home equity loan, now at about 8% rather than the 4% a few months ago. You can go out and get a home equity loan, mortgage your whole house, put it all in Bitcoin, and lose every nickel of it if you want to. But when it comes to oil and gas leases, they say, hold on now. Got to prove to us you're rich. We got to protect you from yourself. This is more government nanny stuff. The idea of the accredited investor is a way to protect the little people from their own stupidity. Your government knows no bounds in its love for you, does it?
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm not a professional wrestling fan, but I find it a little interesting. Vince McMahon in some trouble, apparently some hush payments, about $3 million bucks is what I saw. I haven't gone in depth to these stories, but I think it's kind of interesting, an illustration of our system, because our political system is really just professional wrestling. It's largely fake. It's designed to get you to see a hero and a villain and everything in a staged match. And you find out that the top of it is corrupt. Now, maybe these charges are false because it can't be. Vince McMahon is a Republican. He wouldn't do something like this. Hell, his wife was Trump's Secretary of the Small Business Administration. These have got to be fine Christian conservative people, certainly not embroiled in a sex abuse scandal involving millions of dollars. And wouldn't you think the world wrestling world would be full of transparency and honesty? I mean, come on, look what they sell. I think it's a good kind of an illustration of exactly where we are. It's all fake as hell, designed to get you to cheer for one or the other while they all go backstage and drink together. Meanwhile, the very top of it's corrupt. That's pretty much our political system right there in the WWE. I'm very hard here on policing in the United States. I know a lot of great police officers, people I've got to get along with. I've worked with police officers, not ever been in law enforcement myself, but I've had the ability to hire law enforcement people and worked closely with them over the years, a lot of them that I really like, but I take a lot of issue with a lot of the things that the police do. I believe that the police have become enforcers of what is really pretty disastrous government at just about every level. And they abuse the rights of American citizens because it's part of their job. And that's the defense. Even conservatives will say, well, it's their job. What are they supposed to do? Well, I don't know. Just don't do it. Don't pursue a profession that includes those things. But there are heroic things that police do. I don't know why I feel so odd and isolated that I'm somebody, whether it's Trump or the police or anybody, I'll praise them when they do good and criticize them when they do bad. That is really beyond the pale for most people. You've got to be all completely for the police or completely against the police. You have to be completely for Donald Trump or completely against Donald Trump. This is, everything's got to be black and white. We're a very simple people, it appears to me. I will praise the police when they do right. I will criticize the police relentlessly when I believe they are just acting as enforcers of the political class, which is a large part of their job. But we did have a hero die, and I didn't know his name the other day when I brought it up. His name is Kenneth Croom. And this is the officer that was killed trying to help a woman in a domestic violence situation. Domestic violence known to be some of the most dangerous calls that police officers go out on here. And I challenge the police a lot here, but I want to make sure that I heap praise where it is warranted as well. Kenneth Croom died serving the citizens, trying to serve and protect the way policing should be. That is just about the most honorable, is the ultimate honorable work in our society for serving and protecting American citizens. And Kenneth Croom is being honored through a whole host of ceremonies yesterday. There's things going on today. I believe in Meridian tomorrow they'll be having a lot of stuff, and every bit of it justified. Kenneth Croom is an American hero doing exactly what police should do, which is trying to protect citizens from violent aggression from others, be it personal or physical or property-wise. This is the heroic work that police do, and Kenneth Croom paid for it with his life. He is a hero, and I'm thrilled to see all of the people from law enforcement to the public that are showing up for his memorial services. Kenneth Croom, you are a hero, an absolute hero, and you died doing just God's work here on this planet. So all respect and honor goes to Kenneth Croom. I want to make sure that people understand when police do heroic work, and particularly when they pay for it with their lives, they should be honored endlessly. This guy is a true hero, and so sorry for his friends, family, and others who were affected by his death. Anyway, Kenneth Croom, he is a hero. Be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
Before we move next hour to the horrors that is American foreign policy, led by psychopaths for generations now in Washington, D.C., we'll talk about the tragedy that is unfolding here in the United States as the FDA unanimously, not one dissenting voice at the FDA, for rolling out these shots, these COVID shots, on toddlers. Not one dissenting voice. It was unanimous. We need to experiment on these children, even though they are at zero risk of death from COVID and even severe disease. Unanimously, the FDA, and now the CDC is considering it. Let me just tell you, the CDC is, as I've told you, along with the FDA, the FDA is a full-on pharmaceutical sales organization. The CDC, most particularly, is a vaccine sales organization. It's not a public health, body. They get $40 billion a year in order to push pharmaceutical company products. The pharmaceutical companies own the CDC and the FDA unanimously. I did intervene yesterday. I met a young girl. I talked to a young girl yesterday who's going to medical school. I asked her about these shots. First thing she said was not unexpected. I'm not mad at her. She's studying in college right now under people who are preparing her for medical school. And she said, I believe everybody should get this shot. And I said, well, what about toddlers? They're considering right now putting this in the arms of toddlers. And she said, well, I guess it would be good. I said, does it give you any pause for concern that this has never been tried before? There is no long-term safety studies whatsoever that a six-month-old injected with this genetic therapy now, we have no idea what happens to them at 5 years old. None whatsoever. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. I'm going to show you that in a second. Rand Paul, libertarian. Rand Paul, he's a Republican, libertarian-leaning Republican, son of the OG of the libertarian Republicans, Ron Paul, got another crack at Fauci the other day and got him to make what I think is a pretty big admission. You'd think it'd be covered pretty widely in the news. Of course, it's not.
Dr. Fauci, the government recommends everybody take a booster over age 5. Are you aware of any studies that show reduction in hospitalization or death for children who take a booster?
Right now, there's not enough data that has been accumulated, Senator Paul, to indicate that that's the case. I believe that the recommendation that was made was based on the assumption that if you look at the morbidity and mortality.
And haven't their assumptions always been right? You remember? You remember their assumption that if you took this shot, the virus stops with you. You can't catch it. You can't spread it. You're 100% safe from any bad COVID outcomes. If you remember that assumption? How'd that work out for them?
Has been accumulated, Senator Paul, to indicate that that's the case. I believe that the recommendation that was made was based on the assumption that if you look at the morbidity and mortality of children within each of the age groups, you know, 0 to 5, 5 to 11.
Right. So there are no studies, and Americans should all know this. There are no studies on children showing a reduction in hospitalization or death with taking a booster. The only studies that were permitted, the only studies that were presented, were antibody studies. So they say, if we give you a booster, you make antibodies. Now, a lot of scientists would question whether or not that's proof of efficacy of a vaccine. If I give you 10, or if I give a patient 10 mRNA vaccines and they make protein each time, or they make antibody each time, is that proof that we should give 10 boosters, Dr. Fauci?
No, I think that is somewhat of an absurd exaggeration.
Now, of course, the reason it sounds different, doesn't sound like Anthony Fauci is live there in the Senate chambers, is because he's participating in the hearings by Zoom. But why? He's one of these people slithering around Washington, D.C. Why is he by Zoom? Oh, it's because Anthony Fauci, after his fourth or fifth shot, whatever he's on now, supposedly, he's got COVID. He's got COVID. There are still no long-term safety studies on the vaccine for older people either. But Mike, they did studies, and the people that originally enrolled in the trials are still out there. I'm sure that they're taking a look at them. They gave half of their study group a placebo, and half of them got the shot. So now we're probably almost 2 years into safety studies, Mike. We're at least got 2 years now of data between the shot and the unshot, right? Wrong.
Tens of thousands of people who volunteered to participate in the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccine studies are still participating in follow-up research, though that's somewhat hampered because many people who had been given a placebo shot opted to take the vaccine instead.
There's not even a placebo group left in the original trial studies of this less than 2 years later. Now, I'm no scientist, no researcher. I ain't got none of them there PhDs. But my understanding of a control group is they do not take the same medication that is being tested as the people that are in the non-control group. And yet we've got this group of people now that have been the placebo people in the study, and now they have actually gone out and taken the shot, meaning there is basically no comparison between the shot and the unshot when it comes to the original of these things. This needs to be stopped for our toddlers. It should have been stopped with our teens. I've got a clip later on. That will show you kind of the thinking of some parents in this country. I would hope, you know, don't scream at them. Try to win them over, like I did with this promising
medical school student, I just said, does it not cause you the slightest bit of pause to just wonder, since they haven't done any studies? Normally, they study these vaccines for 7 to 12 years. Does it not seem like maybe if you've got a group of people, and particularly talking about our toddlers, who are at zero risk of bad COVID outcomes, does it not seem a little risky to take an untested vaccine? Not even just an untested vaccine, an untested therapy, something that's never been injected into the arms of toddlers ever. This particular technology, this mRNA genetic therapy, never been tried on toddlers before. There are foods we don't let our kids eat when they're young. We don't want our children, we don't want our toddlers smoking marijuana because we know it affects the brain. There are things that can set the course of a child's development behind if you put it into their body. We know this on many things. Why would this be any different? This program against our toddlers needs to be stopped. Hopefully we can save some of these kids.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It's Friday, so I've got my segments I end every week with, starting with this one, False Flag Friday, where I try to expose the con job that is run on Americans for decades now, leading you to wars based on lies. I will use a quote from the great George Carlin. George Carlin said, "War is rich old men protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class men off to die. It always has been." Now, it probably needs to be edited a little bit. Got plenty of bloodthirsty women out there, too. Your Madeleine Albrights, your Nancy Pelosi's, your Liz Cheney's. So it is, war is rich old men and women protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class men off to die. It always has been. Of course, they don't do it for no reason. It's not just about protecting property. It's really largely about protecting profits as well, as we talk about endlessly here on this show. And here we go again. Cha-ching. The registers at the defense contractors keep on humming.
President Biden today announced another $1 billion in military aid for Ukraine, the allocation being billed as the single largest tranche of weapons and equipment since the war began. The effort is intended to help stall Russia's effort to overtake and control the eastern Donbas region. The aid reportedly will include anti-ship missile launchers, howitzers, and more rounds for the high-mobility artillery rocket systems the U.S. is already providing. The U.S. will also provide more money for humanitarian assistance. The aid was announced in a meeting got underway in Brussels, more than 45 nations to discuss aid to Ukraine.
Oh, they're great. This must be great. Another $1 billion for you guys over there. Now, I'll just say this again. I started the show off on this. So Michael Guest is saying that the funding of Planned Parenthood was just part of a larger budget. He said he needed to fully fund the military, and the only way to do that was to vote yes on that spending bill that he knew was going to siphon off money to Planned Parenthood, but he just couldn't vote no because our military. This is part of that military spending. This is part of that Pentagon spending. This is part of that national security spending, not to mention the other trillions of dollars of stuff the conservatives makes your stomach hurt to think of what they're spending money on out of Washington, D.C. But he just had to vote yes on that spending bill, even though it was going to be used for abortion, because he had to make sure that we fully funded the military. There's your military dollars right there. $1 billion more on top of the other tens of trillions we're well over. Probably 60, 70 billions. I think I said trillions, excuse me. There is a big difference, surprisingly. Tens of billions of dollars heading over to Ukraine. So there you go. That's what Michael Guest voted for. I think it's just as objectionable as the vote for Planned Parenthood. I thought this was kind of interesting. This thing's going on behind the scenes in this attack on Russia by the West. It's not all seen. Some of it is also unseen, and I found this very, very interesting. A little operation that the West and the United States is running against Russia outside of the theater of war.
The West wants everyone to stop buying Russian oil. The U.S.
and some of its allies have banned Russian oil imports. Europe is planning an embargo, and developing countries like India are under pressure to comply. The plans of the West are not succeeding, so they've come up with a new strategy. The US and Europe want to form an oil cartel, a cartel that will decide how much the world ends up paying for Russian oil.
Now, I assume we can get down with this accent. She's saying cartel to us Americans. She says cartel, but it's cartel. The Americans are putting together a cartel of people. Basically, they're going around to everybody and saying, don't pay anything other, you know, higher than this for Russian oil. This is led by the West, you know, the bastion of freedom, democracy, capitalism, and free markets. We're trying to bully the rest of the world into paying lower prices, not taking Russian oil, not paying what Russia is selling it for. People need energy. I don't know if you've noticed around the world, gas prices kind of high. Natural gas prices pretty lofty these days. Well, I see somewhere the other day, natural gas went up like 70% in a day. Can't remember where that was. The U.S. is trying to, the psychopaths that run our foreign policy, are trying to create a new cartel.
Some extreme measures are being discussed here, and these could have a direct bearing on India. So what is the West planning? Allow me to explain. There are talks that are on between the U.S. and Europe. The idea is to limit what Russia earns from oil. And the solution, they think, is a buyer's cartel. They want to rig the market against Russian oil. How would they do that? The European Union has a key role to play in this. Collectively, this bloc, the EU, will set a lower price for Russian oil. It will be less than what they're paying right now. So if Europe demands a lesser price, the others will follow. At least that's what their plan is. America is aggressively pushing for this cartel. U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen is spearheading the talks. This is what she said about it. I think a lot of people, including me, find it appealing from a general economic point of view. The larger the cartel, the better. Pay less for Russian oil. That's what she's suggesting. Everyone will demand the same price. No one will complain since they're getting cheap energy. At the same time, less cash goes into Russia's war chest. Sounds like a great idea, but it's not.
Yeah, see, there may be some other countries that are not quite down with this. They might just take the oil because they don't want their citizens. They don't want their citizens with oil shortages. They may be willing to pay what Russia is asking for these things. This is collusion. This is anti-competitive behavior. They are the U.S., run by that little gnome, Janet Yellen, trying to create a cartel around the world. And trust me, they are using threats of military force and coups. I mean, I cannot imagine the pressure put on countries. Oh, yeah, if you go out in the market and you pay Russia what they're asking for their oil, if you don't agree to the price that we say, oh, there's going to be big problems for you and your government. This is part of that $1 trillion national security budget. It's used to go around and threaten countries around the world to do our bidding.
There are fundamental issues with how the plan will be executed. The United States realizes Europe's limitations, so it is taking the matter to the G7. It is talking to the Group of Seven. It could force other countries to accept these price caps, countries like India and China. There are two options. Number one, the insurance companies. How would this work? You see, shipments of oil are often insured in Europe or the United Kingdom. Oil shipments do not move around without insurance. That's how they work. So they will insure only those shipments that fall under the agreed price cap. G7 countries are exploring this idea, so any country outside Europe must comply with this price cap.
Can you even imagine? Can you even, for just in your wildest imagination, imagine another country doing this to us? No oil can ship to or from your country. We won't insure the boats. We will not insure your oil shipments, so they're not going to move. You're not going to get oil in or out of the United States because nobody's going to insure the vessels unless you play ball with us. Can you imagine if that threat was levied towards us? There's a lot of Russia hawks out there. Well, that sounds great, Mike. They're getting together. They're going to try to suppress the cost. Going to give cheaper gas and oil to everybody else. Well, there's all kinds of ways for cheaper oil and gas. Let everybody drill and have a free market across the world. There'd be oil just sloshing across the planet. Well, they don't do that. They disrupt the markets, and now they have got their sights set on Russia. They're not going to insure the vessels to ship Russian oil. And see, this is the kind of thing that drives all these other countries who don't want to play ball to say, well, maybe we should Maybe we should set up our own insurance companies. Quit doing business with the West. And ultimately, this is what will be the demise of the U.S. dollar.
Force Russia to sell its oil for less. Only then will their shipments be insured. That's one way for them to force the hand of others, through insurance. Option number two is sanctions. And this is a more targeted measure, one that America could execute single-handedly. What will these sanctions look like? The U.S. will set the parameters of the purchase, basically dictate the price at which countries like India should buy Russian oil. What if they refuse to comply? They will be cut off from U.S. financial systems. That's what this oil cartel would represent. U.S. and allies say they want to ensure economic stability, that they want to stop financing the war in Ukraine. But in reality, they'll end up influencing the global prices of oil.
See, I love this because this is an Indian woman in India, and India realizes, hey, we're on the losing end of this thing. You can't tell us what we can buy Russian oil from. And you mean to tell me if we don't go along with your little game, you're going to sanction us? You're going to cut us off from the international payment system? More of the West, and the U.S. in particular, using the financial system as a threat against others. This is why they're building other systems to start going around the U.S. dollar. A lot of people will hear this and they don't really care. Probably not as interesting to most people as it is to me. But this is another nail in the coffin of the U.S. dollar. This is more meddling and bullying that is forcing other countries to find alternatives to doing any business with the West whatsoever. And certainly, they don't want to rely on our dollar any longer. They will find a way around it, probably sooner rather than later. Pieces are already being put together. This is the kind of stuff that will destroy our currency. And as I said, so many things are going on behind the scenes that we don't even see. You have to go over to Indian media. You have to find media in India to tell you exactly the latest psychopathic moves by the U.S. State Department and Treasury. It's unbelievable. None of us could even imagine other countries doing. If someone else did this kind of stuff to us, we would consider it an act of war. Yet we believe we just have the privilege of being able to exert this kind of pressure on the rest of the world, and they're just supposed to bend to our will. Just absolutely disgusting. You know, I try to stay on top of what the Russian government is saying during this conflict with Ukraine. We'll never hear about it, so I kind of keep my eyes open for anything that comes out when a major addresses from Putin or any of his top guys, Lavrov, or anybody says anything. I think it's important we should know it here. It's complete news blackout on it here. We pretend that they're not saying anything, that they're just evil people and they need to be shunned. On the May 16th, Dmitry Trenin, he addressed the Council for Foreign Defense Policy, and it's a long article about all of the things, how they see this thing going. But I thought it was interesting. They see three outcomes to the war in Ukraine, and I'll tell you what they are. This is from the Russian point of view. Number one is it stops at Donbass. And this is the eastern Ukraine area where there are ethnic Russians. These people voted, I believe, in 2015 to be a part of Russia, and Vladimir Putin turned them down. Isn't that strange behavior from a guy that everybody's telling you is hell-bent on the conquest of not just Ukraine, but all of Eastern Europe? They voted to be part of Russia, and he said, niet. But they are ethnic Russians there, and Russia says maybe this stops at the Donbass. They're going to keep Crimea, and they're going to keep the Donbass. That's where ethnic Russians live. Those are the people that were being murdered by the Ukrainian government for the last 8 years. This is probably the best scenario. Zelensky, for his part, has said that he is committed to even taking Crimea back. If you remember, Crimea voted, 90% of the population voted to be part of Russia rather than Ukraine. This is also Russia's only warm water port, I believe. Russia's not giving up Crimea. Zelensky is saying he's going to take Crimea has been controlled by the Russians for 8 years now. Zelensky's saying he's going to go in there and take Crimea back too. Just obviously prolonging and making this war worse if that's the case. Thank heavens Michael Guest and Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde-Smith all voted to give them all this money to prolong this war, right? Aren't you proud of your Republican representation up in Washington, D.C.? They're prolonging this war, making it worse for the Ukrainians and possibly accelerating this thing. So the Russians see three outcomes. One is it stops at Donbass. When Donbass is occupied, this means that it's just pretty much hands off. It's over. Leave us alone. Leave the ethnic Russians alone. We recognize this as an independent area. Not part of Ukraine, not part of Russia. but the people there are protected, and the Ukrainian government agrees to stop attacking them and murdering them. That would be probably preferable. If that doesn't work, they think that Poland and Romania may attack Russian flanks within Ukraine and possibly in Russia, too. This would be an escalation of the conflict, and it would certainly bring NATO into the thing. And then number three was the most interesting one, particularly for this segment every Friday. The third scenario will happen if Britain decides to, quote, turn the board over to bring down the entire political structure in Europe, bringing the level of confrontation to the risk as a direct conflict between Russia and the United States. This scenario would be realized through the creation of a controlled catastrophe in Ukraine and a successful military coup. The catastrophe most likely will be the detonation of a nuclear charge in a large Ukrainian city, then to blame it all on Russia, a false flag. Russia knows how America operates. And if we want this war, it's not going well for the Ukrainians right now. You're not being told that. You were told that the people in the Azov steel plant were evacuated. Actually, they were defeated and captured, but the news reported that they evacuated. They've been moved from that steel plant. They didn't mention that they were moved into Russian custody and the fact that the Azov Brigade were Nazis. They leave these things out of the American media, but that is what's happened. So Russia knows the MO here in the United States, and the false flag is certainly on the table, and we'll be watching for it. We've already had some of them. I thought this was kind of interesting, a little bit off of Russia, but this is actually the military's and veterans' objection to student loan forgiveness. I thought this was interesting.
A new poll says veterans oppose President Biden's plan to forgive student loans. A veterans advocacy group says it would reduce the incentive to join the military and partake in a student loan forgiveness plan offered to veterans. Apply money they would have used to help pay for their children's education instead. But the poll by veterans advocacy group Mission Roll Call shows that almost 80% of veterans do not think it's fair to share this privilege with those who did not sacrifice via military service. Veteran Daryl Owens of America's Warrior Partnership said via the Center Square that the plan to forgive student loans is a slap in the face to veterans and removes a big incentive to serve. He also says it could lead to less people entering the military and cause a national security crisis.
I kind of get their point there. I understand what they're saying. They're saying, look, one of the big bennies for joining the military is you can get your student loans forgiven. You know, just another part of building the empire, right? Taxpayer dollars stolen from you. You paid for your kids' college. But in order to build the empire and get enough meat puppets into the military so that our rich old guys and gals can send them halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand, they give away some of your taxpayer dollars to the colleges to pay off their student loans. Now, I can understand where the veterans are coming from with this, but I got to tell you, when he says this could harm recruitment, not as many people will join the military. To that, I say, great. This should be enacted across the planet. I can't remember who it was that I read the quote from. I think it might have been Bill Burr, the comedian Bill Burr. He said just everybody in all of the militaries around the world should just quit. Just quit. Leave these freaks with the power to direct militaries with nobody to direct. I did a show about it a while back. Would you allow your child to join the military in its current form right now? And the vast majority of people, even those that consider themselves patriots and great Americans, would say, hell no. I would never let my child be life be at the whims of the psychopaths in Washington, D.C. One other thing real quick, as I saw a headline today, fears grow over Iran nuke program as Tehran digs new tunnel network. By most accounts, Iran is closer to being able to produce a bomb today than at any other point in the two-decade-long saga of its nuclear program. Huh, that's interesting. Maybe we shouldn't have gotten out of the nuclear deal. I'm just saying. I just love watching these headlines. Oh, those Iranians, they're up to something. We can't see. There's no inspectors in there. They kicked out the inspectors. Yeah, of course they kicked out the inspectors. You ripped up the Iran nuclear deal. They were never accused of cheating when the Iran nuclear deal was in place, but Trump ripped it up, and everybody carries water for him. That's a great idea. Oh, he's a great idea, because we disagree with a war in Iraq and war in Afghanistan and war in Syria and war in Libya and war with Russia, but Iran, we need to get tough with. This is the bizarro world that the diehard Trump supporter lives in. Anyway, yeah, so Iran's getting closer. Gee, maybe you should have stuck with that deal. But the most tragic news in the deep state, the Foreign Affairs of the United States, as Julian Assange, a judge, has reportedly approved his extradition to the United States. His wife has basically come out and said the charges over his head right now are so severe, if he goes to the United States, he'll kill himself. They've tried to slow kill him anyway. Mike Pompeo, Trump's great pick for Secretary of State, you know, after he was at the CIA, where he told you in public, we're taught to lie, cheat, and steal. Then he becomes Secretary of State, and he took his little operation against Julian Assange and actually floated the ideas of either murdering him or kidnapping him. I would never in my life cast another vote for Donald Trump, who only with the stroke of a pen in the last days of office needed to just pardon Julian Assange. The right seems to be all a Twitter, pun intended, with dreams of free speech here in the United States. You hate the censorship. You can't believe you're getting knocked off. I can't believe Donald Trump was taken off Twitter, but most people have no problem with Julian Assange rotting in a jail cell. He doesn't get his freedom of speech because Mike Pompeo told you he was a hostile non-state actor. He's now poised to be extradited to the United States, where we will finish off the slow killing of Julian Assange. If you really care about free speech, you'd be outraged that Trump didn't pardon Julian Assange and the treatment that he received during the Trump administration under the tutelage of the bloated, well, formerly bloated, he did lose a lot of weight, the blood-soaked creature that is known as Mike Pompeo. This is a truly sad story, what they have done to Julian Assange. If you have any dreams of ever having transparency and taking down the deep state, Julian Assange should be one of the people you carry a banner for. But Mike Pompeo told you he was no good, so that most people don't really care. It's really, really sick, sick stuff. We're watching our government just murder a journalist in front of our eyes. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we finish up this week with a segment that I finish every week with as we chronicle the world's descent into utter madness with this week on the Crazy Train. All aboard! Now, I got to tell you, we're going full-on third world country here in the United States. There just seems to be no doubt about that, and nothing was more illustrative than that than we couldn't even feed our babies for a period of time there. We had the baby formula shortage because Abbott Labs, apparently, was just arbitrarily shut down by the federal government. Again, your government loves you. Don't ever forget that. But they opened back up. Well, until now, the company at the center of the ongoing baby formula shortage, Abbott, has once again halted production at its Sturgis, Michigan plant after severe storms caused flooding inside the facility. This company said in a statement, according to the statement, production and distribution will be delayed for a few more weeks. Insult to injury. Here was an interesting one. We're going to get into some Biden stuff. For those of you who disagree with me on the military and you believe we should bankrupt ourselves in the name of empire, because that's what the conservatives tell me to believe. I'll get you back on my side. This is Larry Summers. This guy used to be a Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton in this country. But he's got a new take on exactly what's causing inflation in this country. And you want to talk about a reach. Check this one out.
I think the banana Republicans who are saying that what happened on January 6th was nothing or okay are undermining the basic credibility of our country's institutions.
Yay!
And that in turn feeds through for inflation. Because if you can't trust the country's government, why should you trust its money?
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, he's onto something there. That's exactly right. And it's what the rest of the world is figuring out, too. You can't trust the United States. Sure as hell shouldn't trust their money. But the fact that he believes it was January 6th, it was the kick when you started eroding trust in the government because of what those rascals did on January 6th, that's what kicked off this inflation. They've destroyed the faith in the U.S. dollar. Good Lord. Last week, we had severe storms coming through. I was cut off by some emergency alerts, so I left a couple of clips on the floor. We got a bunch here of Joe Biden, the hapless, mentally incompetent Joe Biden. And I missed this one last week, so it's a little old, but I can't resist playing it. Joe Biden made just this disastrous appearance on the Jimmy Kimmel show. Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel is about as slimy as they get, and I don't know how much money he's gotten for pushing vaccines and big government and all the rest of the stuff he does. He's such a statist. He's not at all funny anymore. But he must have had to go home and take a shower after trying to prop up. I mean, this was like a Weekend at Bernie's moment, trying to get Joe Biden through this interview on the Kimmel show. This was just one of those exchanges that was just absolutely bizarre.
I'm serious. You turn on the TV, look at the ads. When's the last time you saw biracial couples on TV? When's the last time you saw...
For about the last 25 years, Joe.
Saw the way, I mean, people are selling products. They do ads to sell products. And they sell products when people, they appeal to people. This generation is going to change everything. We just got to make sure we don't give up. There's an ability for us to do everything from increase the access to education, healthcare. Look what we did in healthcare.
We've never been healthier. It's never been more affordable. When's the last time you saw an interracial couple on television? Oh, my gosh. Biden was in rare form this past week, and these are always my favorites. This was Joe Biden doing his inner, I can only imagine, Hitler, Stalin, but it's really his get off my lawn voice that I love the best.
I don't want to hear any more of these lies about reckless spending. We're changing people's lives.
Well, he's right about that. Again, there's always truth in these clips. He's changed a lot of people's lives. There's no doubt about that. People's lives are dramatically worse than they were when he took office, to be sure. He's not the greatest teleprompter reader, but you got to think, you know, Pride Month is very difficult for somebody who has trouble reading a teleprompter and certainly can't remember things on his own. He struggled through this one for sure.
I'm also proud to have signed an executive order on my first day in office to combat discrimination against LGBTQI plus America in housing and healthcare.
Let's hear that again. This crowd, he's so familiar with and such a champion of. All these letters.
The executive order on my first day in office to combat discrimination against LGBTQI plus Americans.
Cures.
In housing.
Did I hear a niner in there somewhere?
In healthcare, in education, in employment, financial services, and the criminal justice system. First thing I signed. And you know...
I'm sorry, I want to go back and listen to that one more time.
...was to combat discrimination against LGBTQI plus Americans.
Well, that wasn't his worst one. This is definitely my favorite one. He's had trouble with this before. This is a real stumbling block. I heard somebody saying the other day that maybe there's going to be an attempt to take Joe Biden out of office. I think it's already started, really. They're pulling the plug on his watch. He is too stupid to realize it, and many Democrats are as well. Joe Biden was put into office for the collapse, so they could somehow take this geriatric patient and basically blame it all on him and act like nobody else was responsible for it. I mean, they're setting him up to fail. Now, I have no doubt about that. This is why he was allowed. This is why he was allowed to be the guy. He's a very easy scapegoat. They will tell you, turns out, in years from now, they'll go, well, we didn't know, but, you know, he really was not mentally capable back then. It was just all his fault. Everything else is fine. Now we've got, you know, normal people. I think they're setting him up to fail. And so maybe somebody's putting this word into his teleprompter repeatedly because he knows he has trouble with it. For all of you following along, the word is autocracy. Autocracy.
Triggered by the teen pandemic and now made worse by Russia's war in Ukraine. And the political turmoil from autocracies, regimes in our region, has led to record levels of migration.
Remember, we're going to play it again. The word is autocracy. Autocracy.
Triggered by the teen pandemic, has now made worse by Russia's war in Ukraine and the political turmoil from autocracies, regimes in our region, has led to record levels of migration.
Holy cow. Oh, this has got to be a movie. Well, somebody wake me up. I knew what the word was there. The word was autocracy. On this one, I have no earthly idea what the word was even supposed to be.
not enough, but $800 million, that will help respond to the influx of refugees from Venezuela.
He does a little, what's that old musical style, scatting? You know, what's called scatting? What was the old Cab Calloway? Didn't he do scatting? I think he scatted in the middle of this. I think there's other definitions of that word. Maybe I'm not meaning to use, but I'm not sure what this was right in the middle here. If anybody can tell me this, email me, Mike Madison at WYAB, if you can decipher this one.
Not enough, but $800 million, I should have helped respond to the influx of refugees from Venezuela.
Golly. Holy cow. His press secretary was asked by Don Lemon, actually, about, you know, as I say, this is the beginning of them starting to take him down. I got it wrong. I thought it was going to be somewhere around May of this year. I obviously got that prediction wrong, but they are beginning the controlled destruction of Joe Biden. They're going to let him take the blame for all of the bad things that were actually caused by, you know, decades of bad policy and corruption. They're going to let him take the fall. So now they're starting to take him down.
This question. Oh, my gosh. He's the president of the United States. You know, I can't even keep.
Does the president have the stamina physically and mentally, do you think, to continue on even after 2024?
Don, you're asking me this question. Oh, my gosh. He's the president of the United States.
Get out of here.
You know,
are you not seeing that same vibrant, energetic man that I'm seeing? Autocratic regimes. Are you not, John Lemon? Are you not seeing this young, vibrant man that we're all seeing?
Can't even keep up with him. We just got back from New Mexico. We just got back from California. That is not a question that we should be even asking. Just look at the work that he does.
See, that was Don Lemon. That was a warning to Don Lemon. You can't see this. I actually just have this on a raw audio file, but I would imagine maybe she did the kind of the throat cutting motion. Don, that's not a question we should be asking. You know what I mean? Kind of more of a threat, really, than a comment. It's Don. Don't you understand? Those are questions we're not to be asked. I'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, putting another week in the books. Final segment for today's show. I want to remind everybody, if you're looking for a great place to go eat this weekend or even get some takeout food or have it delivered, more on that in a second, make sure you check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there across the street from Germantown High School. These are 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas made right in front of you. You see the whole process. You build the pizza the way you want it. It also got pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, brownies. Great selection of craft beers. Also, wine is there. It's a great environment, great place, great staff. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned place. Make sure that you download their app. You're going to want to get points every time you go. You scan a little code on your receipt. You earn points. You get all kinds of freebies. You're going to be going a lot, so you might as well get the benefits of doing that. I want to also say, you've probably heard some ads on the show. They're looking for some help. Really, what they're looking for there, they need somebody that can be a good assistant manager out there. They really do. And somebody that's just got the head screwed on straight. They don't even have to have a ton of restaurant experience, but a responsible, dependable person that's ready to be the leader of young men and women. Your Pie sure could use somebody of that caliber out there. It's a great job. The hours are great. I've worked in restaurants that were open until 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I got home at 5 a.m. This place closes at 9 o'clock. You're not going to have a lot of late nights, not a lot of early mornings. It's just a great place to work, and they're looking for some leaders there. So if you know anybody, make sure to check out Your Pie. They can go to Indeed. You can see listings there for like a shift leader position. This could easily be an assistant manager position for somebody who can come in there and do a good job for them. So anyway, that's not an easy find these days somehow. That's Your Pie. And if you want to get Your Pie delivered, they use Take a Break Deliveries. That is takeabreakdeliveries.com. Another, so you can order from a locally owned, veteran-owned business and have it delivered to you by a locally owned, veteran-owned delivery service. That's takeabreakdeliveries.com. That is the only authorized delivery service for your pie. You need to come in there. It's a very nice place. You'll enjoy your meal eating in, but if you want to stay home and have it delivered, then make sure you check out takeabreakdeliveries.com. All right, let's finish here with this week on the crazy train. Let's see what all else we had here. We're headed straight back into the 1970s stagflation, and I'll spare you my educational series on why it's happening and who's responsible for it, but it's quite obvious we're headed back to the stagflation, which means a slowing to retreating U.S. economy along with inflation. And a lot of the things that happened in the 70s are happening all over again.
You or your parents might remember gas lines from the 1970s, when gas was expensive and hard to find. Out of those days came carpooling.
Ah. We're about to come get you.
Where two or more people share the ride to split those gas costs.
How are you doing, sir?
Fast forward 40 years, and Latoya Davis is carpooling home from her hospital job. She's one of many new workers signing up for carpools and vanpools.
Pick everybody up and set the circle.
Ron Bryant coordinates this one and says it's a great way to avoid paying $5 or $6 gas prices.
Save money on gas. You have a place to park.
Now, let's say, like me, you have a 15-mile drive to work with gas at $5 a gallon. You're paying $4 each way to drive. That's $8 a day. $40 a week. Add one rider and pay just $20 a week for gas. Add a second and pay just $13 a week.
It is a lot cheaper. Yes, and then if you do have parking costs, you split those with however many people in the van, too.
Summer Jones, who oversees a community rideshare program, says it's about more than just gas prices.
It's just relaxing, saves money, saves wear and tear on your car. And just, you know, some people really like the friendship.
The U.S. Census Bureau says carpooling peaked at 20% of all drivers in 1980, but fell to just 9% due to low gas prices. But cheap gas is gone, and riders like Latoya Davis are happy that carpooling is back.
Now, see, Joe Biden is the uniter-in-chief. He is bringing people together. Matter of fact, he's cramming them into cars together because they can't afford to drive by themselves to work. Energy Secretary Granholm, what's her first name? Jennifer? Ginny? You know, they are in a box now. I mean, the Biden administration and the Democrats themselves have made such a big deal about getting rid of fossil fuels, and now they're being held to account for that. And it is pretty interesting to watch them try to squirm their way through these kinds of conversations, because the average American is not functionally retarded. And we understand that drilling for more oil at a time when oil is expensive would help. And they're trying to somehow deflect this. But this was Granholm ask about this particular situation.
Do you, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, are you telling me you want them drilling for more oil? You want the refineries putting out more gasoline in 5 or 10 years?
What we're saying is today we need that supply increased. Of course, in 5 or 10 years, actually in the immediate, we are also pressing on the accelerator, if you will, to move toward clean energy so that we don't have to be under the thumb of petro dictators like Putin or at the whim of the volatility of fossil fuels.
She can't say Saudi Arabia because Biden's about to head over there and do the sword dance like Trump did with the Saudi Arabians. So she can't blame them for the gas prices. But basically what this is the oil and gas companies are going, look, we can't commit a bunch of money to new drilling operations. It costs a lot of money to kickstart these things. And you're already telling us that you're trying to extinguish our industry. We're not going to go invest billions of dollars if you're going to just. And this is your energy secretary going, we want it today. We need more oil today. And in 5 years, we'll crush you like a bug after all this investment to give us more oil today. But essentially, she wants cheaper gas prices today to help during the midterms. And then she will go right back to allowing the fossil fuel industry to go to rot. This is an energy secretary. I got a lot of criticisms for Republicans. There's no doubt about it. Our government is corrupt from the top to the bottom, from the right to the left. But the people running the show right now are criminally insane people. So she's got no ideas. She wants her oil today. We just want it today. Good God. She's the energy secretary. She should understand what investment in drilling for oil means. Speaking of the Green New Deal, another success story in the forced march towards all electric vehicles, following in the footsteps of Chevy's Volt, Ford has now been forced to halt sales of its new Mustang Mach-E thanks to concerns about a potential safety defect. Now, I don't understand this story. This defect seems very minor to me. The automaker is telling dealers to temporarily stop selling the vehicle, CNBC reported this week. The safety defect could, quote, cause the vehicles to become immobile. Is that bad? is that a problem? CNBC noted that the issue concerns, quote, potential overheating of the vehicle's high-voltage battery main contactors, which is an electrically controlled switch for a power circuit. So there's just that pesky problem. I mean, they're trying to force us all into electric vehicles. There's just that pesky problem that, well, sometimes the cars, they become immobile. Oops. I'm just going to finish on this. I don't have time to get to some of these other clips. I was driving down the road the other day, and I was just thinking, this war on gasoline and everything. Does anybody ever stop and just think of the amazing technology that is involved? We drill down into the ground. We find a liquid. We're able to put it through some chemical processes. We put it into a machine. We sit into it in a comfortable seat with air conditioning, and it moves us across hundreds and thousands of miles every week to where we want to go. It is a miracle of science, the automobile and the combustion engine. And it seems to be a little lost on a lot of people, I think, just how glad we should all be that we have gas-functioning vehicles on the highways today. It has changed all of our lives for the better, for the substantially better. Somehow that's lost. Don't understand it. Gotta go. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.